we have two burglaries instead of one. That's certainly a way to read that particular language, and I can feel quite certain, at least in Lane County, we'll be dealing with that issue from the defense lawyers and the prosecutors. Same thing as if you steal my car that's in two names, or suppose someone steals 100 cars from Souther Spalding et al. In Portland. Have you got 150 crimes? You do under the language literally read in subsection 2, I fear. And I think that there needs to be some additional thought that goes into that in defining this. Otherwise, we are going to be right back in the same problem area that we are now with the court trying to define when we have multiple crimes and when we don't. As I say, I'm not here to take a position one way or another what ought to be the law, only that I think you ought to take a look at that. Subsection 3...
Can I ask a question about that, Judge?
Certainly.
Representative Smith? I think we have this in our subcommittee this summer. I'm wondering, is that the same situation that the Attorney General brought to us, that when an airplane is blown out of the sky and there are 150 victims, but there's really only one statutory offense, the other side of what you're bringing to us is that should that be but one crime?
Well, certainly that's part of the same problem. It may be easy to say that if you plant one bomb and kill 100 people, we're going to make a choice that those are all separate offenses. And that would be clearly covered, I think, under your language in subsection 2.
But yes. It goes too far.
But it goes too far because you then get into the area that I propose, really how to define a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I see your problem coming, is in defining what a victim is.
Representative Springer?
Would it be useful, just for a starting point, I think this reflects back on our conversation during the interim as well, to distinguish crimes against people versus crimes against property?
That's certainly one way to approach the problem. Again, I'm not really prepared to offer you any hot solutions. I just want to make sure that you're thinking about what I see as an extension of the problem there. And I think there may be a number of things that you could approach it depending on what the legislative policy you decide you want to further is, but at least you need to think about that extension past that point. You do get into, I'm sorry, was there another?
No, I was just reflecting back. I think that was one of the ways that we were trying to resolve it in the interim, because we had the co-tenancy problem and the joint ownership problem on property, but we were looking toward the physical damage to more than one victim.
I think you get into the same problem in subsection 3, where you talk about violating only one statutory provision and only one victim, but repeated instances of violation of the same statutory provision. There, I think you get into the same problem because, for instance, again, going back to my burglary example, is it one burglary when he carries the couch out and another burglary when he carries the chair out and the third burglary when he carries the TV set out? Or is it a separate assault every time when he hits him in the left eye and then a separate assault when he hits him in the right eye? You've still got, under your definition, I think you fall clearly in there. It could be the same kind of problem with rape. You could have the same kind of problem with sexual abuse in terms of touching. Again, I think it just sweeps too broadly because you're going to get into that same kind of problem. And those are the only things that I bring to you on that.
That's a good start.
Thanks a lot.
With a four-section bill, you've only killed half of it.
Yeah.
We still got the relating clause, I think, after that.
The only other thing I'd like to say quickly is on 28...
We'll hold a motion to table.
2896.
I can see the entire interim's work just going...
I should mean to be the harbinger of bad news, but anyway, on 2896, let me say something positive.
I really want to appear before you someday, Your Honor.
Many have expressed that opinion. In Section 4A and 4B, in allowing probation to run after a term of imprisonment, I think that is a very good idea. It's one that I know a number of judges have expressed that they wish they had the authority to do. And a lot of that reason arises from the short, again, the short matrix scores that people have. It's often a tool that I would like to have and other judges would like to have is to send somebody off to the penitentiary on one, knowing that their matrix may be 6 to 12 months. When they come out, standardly, they're going to serve 6 months or less on parole, and that's going to be gone. There's no hook there. You've got nothing on somebody to watch over them, to supervise them. We could bring them back into a probation situation where we could supervise them at the local level on that other offense that starts running after they're released. Certainly gives the local court, and it gives somebody more control over the defendants than to have them simply walk out, smile, and walk away on multiple offenses. And I think it's an excellent idea and should be pursued. I think it's a tool that we could use very effectively. That's all I have to...
Thank you, Judge. Questions? Thank you very much for coming today. We appreciate your time. Let's see, Mr. Sandrock.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pete Sandrock. I'm the Bend County District Attorney, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and I want to thank Judge Hargraves for his fine introduction to our bill.
We won't ask you for an answer to it quite now. We'll give you a couple of days here.
Your consideration is most appreciated. 2267 and 2268 form part of a package that the District Attorney's Legislative Committee has designated for this session and for the past two sessions as our number one legislative priority. Last session, you will recall that this bill passed the House overwhelmingly by, I think, a vote of 54-1, only to die on the Senate side.
You should have started it on the Senate side this year.
Well, I've already started over there, too. Obviously, during a single criminal episode, the defendant's conduct may violate multiple statutes, may injure several victims, or injure the same victim repeatedly in violating the same statute. In those situations, the prosecutor is now free to charge multiple offenses, to go to trial on those charges. The jury may indeed return guilty verdicts on those multiple offenses out of that single same criminal episode. The court, however, does not at this time have a workable rule for determining how many judgments of conviction to enter, or once determining that more than one can be entered, whether to impose sentences either concurrently or consecutively. In a 1981 case, State versus Linthwaite, the Court of Appeals noted that we reiterate that legislative intent in these cases is at least unclear and at worst non-existent. Trial and appellate courts have been struggling with these questions for a decade or more. 2267 tries to deal with this situation. The first operative subsection adopts what is currently the federal rule. And has been the federal rule since 1932, which permits separate convictions and separate punishments for each separate statutory violation occurring within that same criminal episode, provided that the statutes violated have separate and distinct elements. In other words, you cannot convict defendant of the greater crime and a truly lesser included offense. That is the true merger situation, and this bill would not permit that. It would permit the separate conviction and punishment for the defendant who enters a house with the intent to steal and then does steal. The defendant could be separately convicted and punished for both burglary and theft. For the defendant who breaks into a house with the intent to rape the occupant and is scared away, the defendant could be charged with burglary and with attempted rape, and could be separately punished for both, either concurrently or consecutively. The second operative section tries to deal with the enormous uncertainty of sentencing the multiple victim episode. And I have distributed a memorandum for your consideration that cites four or five cases in which Oregon's appellate courts have come to essentially inconsistent conclusions. Sometimes multiple victims result in merged offenses, and in other cases it results in multiple offenses. Subsection 2 tries to address that issue. And recognizing the problem that Judge Hargraves has raised, obviously one of the potential solutions is to say, well, if we're talking about crimes against persons or injury crimes, perhaps that should be the situation, we have multiple convictions. But there are still property crimes, I think, that logically should result in multiple convictions. It may not be the burglary of the single dwelling jointly owned by husband and wife, but it may be a series of burglaries in an apartment house. And I don't think that we want to send the message to potential offenders that you get a bargain discount for continuing that single criminal episode. From a policy standpoint, something has to be done. I agree that we may have to do some more work, and I would hope that we could accomplish that within a very short period of time. The final operative section deals with the rather offensive principle of State versus Garcia, which I'm sure you've all heard the story. It held that with three separate acts of forcible sodomy against the same victim within a 40-minute period of time, that those merged into a single offense. This bill permits the separate conviction, and if the judge chooses separate consecutive sentencing or concurrent as the judge deems appropriate for those multiple offenses.
Mr. Chairman, we have this in our subcommittee during the interim, and it struck me that I wish Representative Springer were still here to refresh my memory. I thought we had come to the conclusion that we wanted to put in some notion of pause for reflection, and that if you could identify a reasonable period of time was available for the defendant to pause to reflect before he committed the second episode or the second act in the same episode, that would distinguish it and it would not merge.
I think that's appropriate. I think it would also answer Judge Hargrave's question of once you've slugged him in the right eye and then immediately followed up with belting him in the left eye, is that one or two assaults? And it certainly seems to me that that ought to be one assault. But if there is a factual distinction with a pause, perhaps, so that we can identify the separate criminal acts, because I think it truly is offensive to imagine that just because you can keep your victim contained for an extended period of time and repeatedly violate that person, that you get the bargain discount for multiple offenses. Right now, the appellate courts have to struggle in this area in divining legislative intent. Where legislative intent is unclear, the courts have generally looked to a rule of statutory construction known as the rule of lenity, which resolves all doubts in favor of lenience rather than harshness. Now, it may be indeed appropriate that a defendant who commits multiple offenses within the same criminal episode be treated leniently rather than harshly, but right now, the way we generally deal with this is to put an artificial cap on the number of offenses that for which convictions can be entered, and it's an automatic and almost knee-jerk reflex. This would create the opportunity for judges to deal harshly with the truly egregious offenses by giving them a greater sentencing range by recognizing that some criminal episodes are much graver than others.
May I interrupt one more time and direct a question to counsel? Linda, didn't we... I notice these two bills are not coming from the interim committee. They're coming from different sponsors. What happened to the discussions in our subcommittee on these subjects? Did they not come out of the final recommendation? Are they in the form of another bill?
No.
Did we bring these in instead, or...
Mr. Chair and committee members, as a matter of fact, the interim group was unable to reach a consensus enough to come up with a recommendation. We did have extensive discussions.
Our subcommittee, though, resolved the issue, did it not?
No, and we sort of went through scenario after scenario of different, you know, variations that we could go on each one of these
circumstances. Nothing even went forward from the subcommittee to the full committee?
That's correct. The only thing that did go, as I recall, went forward, and I'm trying to remember now if it's incorporated in 2087, was the notion that the way to handle more than one offense as opposed to consecutive sentencing would be through, as an aggravating factor under guidelines that would apply into a matrix. But there was no consensus reached even in the subgroup, as I recall, on consecutive sentencing or merger.
Do we have minutes condensed from those meetings the same way we do from these meetings?
There are minutes of all the interim work.
It's my understanding that the interim committee was unable to reach a consensus in these.
I remember being high-centered on it, but I thought we finally resolved it one way or the other and just sent it to the full committee. It probably would be helpful to me if those minutes are available on just these areas to have them to refresh myself on what we went over there, so I won't do that again.
And if I could for a moment address 2268. 2268 is the proposal that would clearly and unequivocally create the statutory authority for trial court judges to impose consecutive sentences. There is no clear statutory grant of authority. It is an issue that is repeatedly raised by the public defender in appeals. It is our understanding that there are several members of the Oregon Supreme Court who view this as a legitimate issue. And I think that we need to create that specific statutory grant. 2268 would not create any greater authority than judges are now exercising, in fact. And I think 2268 would give this committee a vehicle by which perhaps to establish some general standards or guidelines for appropriate and inappropriate cases for consecutive sentences. We consider these bills to be very important. We are most anxious that after three sessions, something finally get out that will improve the situation that we're dealing with, and we will work very hard with you to try to develop something that will meet your concerns.
Linda, did you have a question?
Yeah, two questions. One was, when you say it's been repeatedly raised, the issue of the authority to consecutively sentence, has there been resolve on it? If it keeps getting raised all the time, what are the courts determined on that question?
Bill Gary is here, the Solicitor General, and I think he can be more precise in the how that is being raised.
Okay.
Well, could I advance that question one step further? It seems to me at least two sessions ago, we tried to do something about consecutive versus concurrent in addition to stacking and unstacking last session. What happened to consecutive concurrent in the 79 session?
Mr. Chair,
through the House and Deputy.
I can't answer as to 79, but 81 session, both this consecutive sentencing, the same consecutive sentencing bill and merger bill, both went through the House Judiciary Committee, passed the House floor, and died in Senate Justice Committee.
Could we be refreshed exactly on the format that this went out then in last session?
In exactly the same format as you have it before you right now.
Are we speaking only of 2268 or 2267 as well?
Both, sir. Yeah.
Oh, I think Judge, maybe I'm wrong, but I think Judge Hargraves raises a reasonable question about subsections 2 and 3, and we wrestled with that all interim long, so I'm not sure I'd be willing, if I voted it out in this form once before, and now that I viewed it in the interim, I don't think I would do it without some amendment, the pause for reflection amendment or something like that. but I know we've wrestled with consecutive concurrent on this side.
You sure have.
Every session for my three.
We'll try to work with you, Peter, and with Bill and others in terms of addressing the issues that Judge Hargrave raised, apart from what the ultimate disposition of the bills may be, which I don't know yet, but I think his points are valid. Do you have anything else?
I have nothing else.
Yes. Besides, what are the collateral consequences to making multiple offenses separately punishable outside the possibility of consecutively sentencing for the separate offenses?
It creates a historically accurate record of the defendant's conduct. Probably the most difficult situation that we as prosecutors deal with is one that comes up time and time again. The defendant who breaks in with the intent to rape and is scared off. So we can charge attempted rape and burglary in the first degree. If we convict of both charges, those will merge. We will have to choose one or the other for conviction purposes, and we're put on the horns of a dilemma. Do we choose the burglary in the first degree, the completed offense, which technically carries the greater penalty, or do we choose the attempted rape in the first degree, which more accurately reflects the dangerousness of the defendant's conduct? I think it's an important distinction.
For the purposes of a historic record?
Yes. It labels, I think that as prosecutors, we have an interest in labeling a defendant's conduct for what it is.
Do you come back if you have a burglary and attempted rape, and both of those charges are before the court or the jury, isn't there a separate finding of guilt on both? And then it's just a question of how it's entered as a conviction on the record? I mean, do you have a record at some point of guilt on both of those?
No. What the sentencing order would say would be the prosecutor would choose on which crime to have the conviction imposed, and then the sentencing order would say that as to the other, judgment will be vacated by the terms of this order at such time as when the time for appeal runs or the judgment of the court is affirmed on appeal, whichever occurs first, so that you don't, the judgment on the other is vacated on the remaining charge.
Does that mean it like disappears from any record?
Well, it doesn't mean that it would come off the law enforcement data system. No, the law enforcement data system, I'm not sure how LEDS would record it on that, but certainly the only conviction that would be entered either in court records or, well, I don't know how LEDS would enter it.
Question. Is that person a convicted attempted rapist or not in your situation?
Only if we chose to have the...
You chose the burglary.
We chose the burglary. No. Technically, conviction occurs only when there is a sentence passed on the crime. And because these crimes merge and only one sentence is imposed, and generally for the most serious offense, then the other one vaporizes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge Bonebreak?
I'll be brief, and if I may stand, I only want to say 2896, which is a bill that allows the court to make probation consecutive to a sense of incarceration, is a good idea. I would assume be used sparingly by judges. It does give us an additional tool of sentencing. It's needed, and the judicial conference, we voted, and we support that concept. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. First time I've ever been around Judge Bonebreak where I was sitting and he was standing.
Maybe a first for the whole committee.
Mr. Gary?
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Gary, Solicitor General, appearing on behalf of the Department of Justice. I was going to begin by saying I'll be brief, but I don't think I can be as brief as Judge Bonebreak.
Try. You said you wish you could or you will be.
But I will. I was going to say that I would be brief, but he set a new standard of brevity for us. I approached first of all, the Department of Justice supports House Bill 2267, and with a qualification that I'll mention, also 2268, the consecutive sentence bill. I approached the merger problem from a little bit different perspective than the district attorney. As an appellate lawyer, I have dealt over the past several years with the problem of merger as it arises in the context of the appellate court. And the question that is presented is whether, when a person violates more than one statute or repeatedly violates the same statute or victimizes more than one person, how many crimes are we dealing with? The court has repeatedly stated that, with one narrow exception dealing with lesser included offenses, that is a question of legislative intent. And as Mr. Sandrock indicated, repeatedly has lamented the absence of any expression of legislative intent. The result of legislative silence on the question of how many crimes arise out of a criminal episode is repeated litigation, a series of hopelessly complicated rules that befuddle lawyers and judges and appellate judges alike. No clear indication at the beginning of a prosecution of how many crimes are involved, and no clear indication at the time that sentence is imposed of what the range of the judge's discretion is. It is the Department of Justice's view that whatever product comes out of the legislative session this year, something must be done about this. And to put it quite bluntly, I think it would be irresponsible for the legislature once again to leave this problem to the courts, because the courts are ill-equipped to deal with it. And as Mr. Sandrock indicated, the way that they deal with it is by application of a fairly crude version of the federal rule of lenity. That is, if we can't figure out what the legislature intended, we're going to give the break to the defendant. That's a perfectly proper method of statutory construction, but it creates a very one-sided rule with respect to how many crimes are going to be carved out of a single criminal episode. The second point that I would like to make is that I think the committee must distinguish between multiple punishments and multiple convictions. The court has used the doctrine of merger as a method of addressing its concern about multiple punishments, stacking the matrix, consecutive sentences arising out of a single criminal episode. State versus Garcia involved a sentence of something in the neighborhood of 90 years for a single criminal episode. The court was very concerned that that ought not to occur because of a single criminal transaction. In our view, the appropriate place to deal with the question of when one ought to be subject to multiple punishments is in the area in the statute dealing with consecutive sentences, not in the statute dealing with merger. Because as counsel's question previously indicated, merger does a lot more than just eliminate multiple punishments. It eliminates the possibility of having an historically accurate record of what this defendant was tried for and convicted of. There is a difference between a person who commits a burglary, which is the breaking and entering of a building with the intent to commit a crime. There's a difference between the person who commits the burglary with the intent to commit a rape inside and the person who commits a burglary with the intent to commit a petty theft inside. And yet, under the law of State versus Cloutier and Bullard, the courts do not permit us to make a record that distinguishes between those two distinctly different kinds of criminal conduct. There's a difference between a person who commits a single rape and a person who repeatedly victimizes the same victim over a period of hours. And yet, under the law as articulated in State versus Garcia, we are not able to distinguish between those distinctly different kinds of criminal conduct.
Question? I haven't ever approached it this way before, Bill, but without being facetious, could you not go to the statute and define the crime more adequately so that the burglary would be rather than simply with the intent to commit a crime therein, but would be with the intent to, and then have subsections
commit rape, commit theft, commit, and identify them that way so that you charge accordingly?
I think the answer is you could do that, and it would be a much more difficult undertaking than the admittedly difficult undertaking of trying to define how many crimes you're going to permit a prosecutor and the jury to carve out of an offense. I think we have in 2267 at least a framework, a starting point for the consideration of the various policy issues which you're familiar with from the task force's work. Judge Hargreaves points to some interesting questions about whether you have two assaults when a person hits another person twice. My answer to that, which may be sophistry, is that you have to have two complete sets of elements of the crime in order to create two different offenses. And if you can only prove one continuous intent to assault, then you only have one crime. And two actus reuses, two punches, doesn't constitute two assaults unless there is, as you indicated, some time for the formulation of a separate and distinct intent to commit an assault. Now, I think that the bill could be amended to explicitly state that, and perhaps it ought to be, to make it clear, because one of my main concerns is to avoid and put an end to the litigation that has gone on for a decade